Science is interesting, and if you don't agree, you can fuck off.
Hello, Alan.
Hello, Lillian.
How are you?
I'm very well. Why do we bleep that intro?
Bleep it?
Yeah. I mean, you know.
Why don't we?
I've always wondered that.
I actually don't know. That's a very good question. Yes. Maybe we'll talk to the people in charge. And we can see if we can get that sorted out. But I just want to put it out there that we've got the National Pub Quiz Championship winner sitting with us. Yeah. Alan, what's that about?
Well, the Believe It or Not National Pub Quiz was held on last Saturday at Alexandra Park, and I was lucky enough to be co-opted into a team that won. So we're pretty happy about that.
Was there any particular questions that you won on? Was
oh,
Will's, yeah. Will's told me that you kind of pretty much know everything.
Not compared to the rest of the people in that team. My goodness me, it's frightening. Yeah,
right.
Yeah,
just, so it was a team effort.
It was a team effort, most definitely. Yeah, you had to identify all 10 ingredients in a sample of mulled wine.
What?
Yeah. That was the taste test, and yep, we got all 10. So
wow, yeah. I am impressed.
What are the ingredients?
Like cinnamon.
Oh Jesus! Yeah, cinnamon, cardamom pods, nutmeg, star anise, lemon, lime, orange, vanilla, and a couple of other things. Wine, yes, that was a given. Yeah.
Surely it changes though.
Oh no! This was a actual sample made by the quizmaster's wife, I believe. So,
oh yeah, okay, yeah. So it was just a test.
So it was a tasting thing.
And they put things in there to test you.
Yeah.
Okay.
So we're pretty happy about that. Thank you.
Shall we talk about Marie?
We shall indeed, or Maria, as she was born.
It?
Yes, indeed. Yeah.
Well, see, I don't actually know a lot about her, so can we hear about her?
Well, as you said in the intro, it was her 150th birthday yesterday, so in a departure for Dear Science, rather than having three stories, we're just going to have the one today and just talk about her, because she was an utterly remarkable scientist and an utterly remarkable woman scientist. So she was born 150 years ago yesterday, so 1867, born in Warsaw, and her name was Maria Sklodowska. Her birth name. And so, unsurprisingly, she was pretty good at school and stuff like that. Warsaw at the time was actually not part of Poland, because Poland didn't exist between about 1700 and something and 1919. So Poland really only came back into existence after the First World War and the Treaty of Versailles, because that was all East Prussia and Russia. So living in that part of the world at that time, it was a bit difficult, because the Polish language was sort of suppressed, any sort of Polish nationalism, etc., etc. The Russians weren't having any of that. So a bit difficult for her growing up. And she, as I said, she was good at school. She had a talented older sister as well, a couple of years older than her. She also had another older sister who died of typhus very early on, unfortunately. But the two sisters wanted to go to higher education, obviously wanted to go to university, but as was in the time, they weren't allowed because they were women. So, and it was also a thing, you know, basically the Russians were saying this, and also I guess the Poles, but what there was a thing called a floating university. So this sort of clandestine place of higher education that just sort of went from place to place to place every sort of week, as I understand it. And so they got some training there in this so-called floating
you
university.
You mean they'd go weekly or?
Yeah, well, they'd just sort of go wherever this place sort of set up its shop, you know.
Within they're moving around community or?
No, just within Warsaw, apparently.
Wow,
and, you know, it was just sort of a...
Like a travelling circus, but you said travelling university.
Yeah, travelling university, yeah.
And they would follow?
Yeah, seemingly. So they had to keep ahead of the Russians, because this was all taught in Polish and everything, and so, you know, the Russians didn't like that. So, you know, it was all very cloak and dagger by the sound of it. Sounds terrible.
And would many women go to that?
That I'm not too sure about, but certainly they did, so I'm assuming that probably women did. And I guess as a result of that, her older sister said, no, I can't do this here, so I'm going to go to Paris and I'm going to study medicine. And so that's what happened. And Marie said, okay, well, if you do that, then I'll go out and get a job and I'll support you in Paris. And then once you're all set up there and everything, then I'll come afterwards and I'll do the same thing and you can support me. And so that's the way it works. So she took a job. Marie took a job as a governess, or Maria, as she was at the stage, took a job as a governess.
So her older sister let her go first?
No. The older sister went first.
Right.
Okay, so the older sister went to the Sorbonne in Paris, and Marie took this job as a governess for a couple of years and then supported her. And then eventually in 1891, she went to Paris as well, following her sister. Her sister, by that stage, was okay. She had got married, I think, by that stage. And so she could support Marie or Maria coming to Paris.
And she'd done her training?
Yes. So she ended up as a doctor. So she'd done the training for that, the physician, doctor. So Maria found herself then in Paris in 1891, started to study at the Sorbonne, and she studied maths and chemistry and physics and did very, very well at them all. And she ended up getting 2 degrees from the Sorbonne. And she was very interested in studying magnetism, because magnetism was a big thing at that stage, simply because of sort of the production of electricity. So that's sort of heavily involved in magnets, et cetera, and spinning dynamos and all that sort of stuff. So she was working on that. And as a result of working on that, she then met this fellow by the name of Pierre Curie, who was about sort of 6 or 7 years older than her, an instructor. They met, they fell in love, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And so Pierre was absolutely smitten. So she was saying, no, I'm going to go back to Poland when I finish my degree, and I'm going to go and study for a PhD in Poland. And he said, no, stay here. And she said, no. And he said, well, okay, I'll give up this and I'll come to Poland and I'll teach French in Poland with you, et cetera, et cetera. You know, pretty, aww, pretty cool guy. So she went back to Poland for the summer and tried to enroll in university in Poland. Things had changed there by this stage, seemingly, but still wasn't allowed because she was a woman. So she came back to Paris 1895 and married Pierre in 1895. Had a couple of kids with Pierre and started a PhD at the same time as she was raising the kids. So, you know, obviously totally unheard of for that sort of time.
Mm. So then what? So we, you don't hear much about that. Often she's put up as the first woman who won a Nobel Prize, but absolutely, it's nice to hear this sort of background,
yeah,
some context.
Yeah. So she made her big discovery as a result of essentially 2 big discoveries that were made. One in 1895, which was the discovery of X-rays by Wilhelm Röntgen, and in 1896.
Discovered X-rays?
No, she didn't. No, okay. Wilhelm Röntgen discovered X-rays, and Henri Becquerel discovered radioactivity the next year in 1896. And so those were the big scientific things at the time. So she, like so many people in science, right place, right time. And so she decided to do a PhD thesis on radioactivity, okay? And so nobody knew what the hell this radioactivity was on about. Becquerel discovered it totally by accident. He left a sample of uranium sitting on a photographic plate in a darkened drawer, came back the next day and he found that there was an exposure made on the photographic plate. So this uranium was spitting out God knows what, you know, nobody knew at the time. So she started studying these rays as part of a PhD. And she used a piece of equipment called an electrometer, which could essentially measure radioactivity. This is the first time that radioactivity had been measured. Nobody knew about radioactivity prior to this. Nobody knew that, you know, a sample of uranium is busy shooting out alpha particles and could potentially be very, very bad for you. And we know all about radioactivity today and how bad it is for you. And in those days, they didn't have a clue. And so all the work that she and Pierre did on radioactivity was done in, you know, uncovered benches. You know, there was no safety precautions taken. She'd carry stuff around in her pocket, all this sort of stuff and everything. And so the great, her really great discovery was made as a result of using this electrometer thing. And she'd basically figured out that uranium had a certain amount of radioactivity, a particular amount of radioactivity. It was shooting out so many of these particles per second, essentially. That's the way they measure it. And then she started studying this ore of uranium, which is called pitch blende. And that's where uranium exists in nature. Even though it's radioactive, it does exist. And when she started comparing this uranium ore, this pitch blend, with an authentic sample of uranium metal, she found that the uranium ore had a lot more radioactivity in it. And so she thought to herself, aha, there's got to be something else in here. There's got to be another element in here, or two or three or whatever, that's got a higher radioactivity than uranium. And so she and Pierre then set to trying to isolate this element or elements. And that was a big job. Okay, that was a big job because these other elements, these two elements that she discovered, polonium and radium, and she's famous for the latter, probably not so much for the former, only exist in minute quantities. And so what they did, they started off with 100 grams of pitch blend and they tried to isolate what these other elements were. 100 grams is way too little. So they eventually did a ton. Okay, so they got a ton of pitch blend. They're working out in this little sort of garret stuck on the back of the Sorbonne somewhere. And, you know, no heating, no air conditioning, nothing like that. And it was just hellacious work. And repetitious. The same thing and the same thing and the same thing over and over and over and over and over again. Essentially, and distilling is not the right word, but it gives you an idea of the what they're essentially doing. They're distilling this 1 ton of pitch blend all the way down to 0.1 of a gram of radium chloride, which they then got in 1902.
So how long did that take them?
That took them about 4 years.
Right.
So in 1898, they, both of them, Pierre and Marie, announced the discovery of these two new elements, radium and polonium, and they hadn't isolated them, but they knew they had to be in there because of the radioactivity they were measuring.
Are you you're saying that they existed in minute quantities, but there was enough of them to show
extremely radioactive.
Right.
Yes, extremely. Yeah. And so that was announced in 1898. 1902, they finally isolated radium chloride, as I say, 0.1 of a gram, about 100 milligrams from a ton. And polonium, they never got to isolate pure, partly because it's very short-lived. So it's got a half-life. We're talking, in terms of radioactivity, we talk about the half-life of something. So uranium's got a half-life of 4 billion years or so. And that means after 4 billion years, half of it will have decayed away. And after another 4 billion years, another half of it will have decayed away. Okay?
Why?
Because that's what's going on. Because the atoms in uranium, each uranium atom, its nucleus is essentially too big. And what it does, it starts spitting out these alpha particles, they call them, and eventually it gets down to a manageable size. And what happens over billions and billions and billions of years is that uranium eventually turns into lead. So uranium's radioactive, it goes through a whole lot of other radioactive elements, of which polonium and radium are two, and eventually it finishes at lead, and lead's not radioactive, okay?
But the radioactive stuff has gone out into the atmosphere.
Yep. All these little particles. So every time it spits out a particle, it forms another element, turns into something else. So uranium turns into thorium, turns into protactinium, turns into polonium, turns into et cetera.
And also various versions of uranium, right?
Yes, indeed. Yes, yeah. There's more than one isotope. We're not going to isotopes. We'll be here till 2 o'clock.
Yeah. Okay. we're going to have to finish soon.
So, long story short. So, in 1903, as a result of this amazing work, she and Pierre were awarded the Nobel Prize, along with Becquerel, who was the original discoverer of radioactivity. However, that's not quite true, because the original citation was only for Pierre and Becquerel.
Oh, what?
And she was left off. So Pierre, being the gentleman that he was, got a bit pissed off about this, and so he complained to the Nobel folk, and they added her name. So
wow. So yeah. They left it off just because she was a woman?
I don't think that's... I'm not sure that that's clear. But in doing so, she became the first female Nobel Prize winner in any discipline in 1903, and she got that in physics. And there's only been one other female physics winner of the Nobel Prize since she's
the first person to win, first woman to win a Nobel Prize.
Yes. Yep.
Also the first person and only woman to win it twice, because she also got a Nobel Prize for chemistry later on.
Indeed, in 1911. Mm. Yep.
Which we won't go into. We might need to wrap it up.
Okay, so very, very quickly, Nobel Prize in physics, Nobel Prize in chemistry, first person to win two, only woman to win two. And she went on and did other amazing things. She, in World War One, she ran a fleet of mobile X-ray machines for all of the soldiers at the front. And it's thought that perhaps it was all the exposure to X-rays that she got from those led to her early demise, unfortunately. But she did wonderful things. She founded the Radium Institute, which does all sorts of, or did all sorts of research into chemistry and physics and maths. And quite a remarkable lady. And I think if you were pushed to name a female scientist, hers would be the name that you would probably come up with first, I think. And as I mentioned, there's only two women who've won the Nobel Prize in physics. There's only four women who've won the Nobel Prize in chemistry. And one of those is her daughter. So Irene.
Wow.
Or
Evan.
Yeah. So, and she was working on similar sort of stuff. So radioactivity. And she turned aluminium into a radioactive isotope of phosphorus. And it was the first time that had been done. So she won the Nobel Prize in chemistry in 1935 as well. So, you know, it ran in the family. Pierre died in 1906. He got run over by a carriage, which was really, really tragic. But it was thought that he was really quite sick with radiation poisoning by that stage anyway. Fell over in the street as he got run over by the wheel of a carriage. And Marie, again, she died at the age of 67. And it was thought that her life was shortened by exposure to all of this stuff. Even today, her books, her notes are too radioactive to be accessed. So if you want to look at those, they're in a lead-lined box and you've got to wear special protective equipment to look at her notes, etc. She's got an element named after her. Element 96 is curium. The unit of radioactivity is the curie. You know, she's all over the
incredible.
Place.
Incredible.
Yeah.
Incredible.
Yeah, absolutely, right. Absolutely amazing woman. And, you know, go and read her life story because it really is fascinating and it just shows you the challenges that women faced in those days and, for goodness sake, probably still face in the scientific field. Mm. So, yeah.
Thank you, Alan. Thanks for joining us.
Not a problem.
That was Dear Science.